You're listening to the Zetitic Newscast on the Zetitic News Network with your hosts, Dave, and Xavier Diamant. Proceed by inquiry.
All right, welcome to episode 15 of the Zetitic Newscast. We're your hosts, Dave, and Xavier Diamant. It is, oh gosh, what is it? November 19th, 2020. It would have been cooler if we did it on 2020. 11-20-2020. We have a jam-packed show for you today. It's just me and Xavier today. Last time we had two special guests, Rigoberto and James Iredell. Such a prescient episode when I reflect back on it. It was our pre-election episode, and we kind of knew going into it we weren't going to talk until sometime after the election and the sort of fallout from that. And highly recommend you guys go and listen to that and just reflect on you know, how on target we've been, not just with that episode, but this year, going back really probably to our first episode of 2020, where we didn't quite nail COVID-19 or pandemic, but I do think we sort of summarized in a very prescient way, you know, what ultimately has unfolded this year. Anyways, want to cover a few housekeeping items before we sort of jump into all of the revelations since the election and the last time we spoke. Starting off with the website, if you notice on the live menu item, we've got some new additions. Previously, it was just Theta Live, Theta TV, and the Theta Network, but we added Flat Earth Debate, which is actually the Nathan Oakley 1980 YouTube channel. And Nathan Oakley is a YouTuber who hosts a daily Flat Earth debate. And he hosts panels that join and participate in discussions about the shape of the Earth. And he's a complete savage. I really admire his work, and his work has inspired many discussions on this broadcast. And so what better way to pay homage to him than to incorporate his live stream, which happens every day at 9 Eastern on YouTube, but also on the Zetitic News Network. You can just go to the menu, and I've embedded his YouTube channel. So theoretically, when he's live, it should populate here in the browser. So really convenient and close by to the rest of the information we have on Zetitic News. In addition to that, I included and added the InfoWars Alex Jones show. If for no other reason, then he's going to go down in history as being the first sort of like banned personality in the American sort of political discourse. He was the beta test for the censorship programs, algorithms, the voice print analysis, to sort of, you know, archetypally demonize, you know, an individual based on their beliefs and then just vanquish them from the internet. And that's exactly what we're trying to resist, with our, you know, activities at Zetitic.news. And Alex is really involved in, you know, some huge rallies recently, for, you know, for better or for worse, you know, freedom. People, I wouldn't have met Xavier if it wasn't for Alex Jones. And, he was, you know, responsible for my waking up in many ways. And despite all the critiques that people, you know, offer, against him, you know, he has done a lot of good, at least in my trajectory mm-hmm. with this information. And, given that he is banned, it's just, you know, on YouTube anyways, it's, just like hard to find the information. So if you want to access the information, where do you go? You don't go to Google anymore because you're never going to find it. You should go to ztitic.news and check it out. We've got it all aggregated for free. Mm-hmm. You know, you can just go there like an old-fashioned website, and you know, you don't have to rely on Google to tell you where that information is. And you know, whether you like Alex Jones or not, it's just one of many resources here that you can check out. Mm-hmm. I also want to tease what I think is definitely going to be our initial product offering as far as merchandise. So on the last episode, and I wish this had occurred in the episode, James Iredell gave me a no-mask lanyard produced by citizensforfreespeech.org, and I just love the spirit of it. He had, you know, a bunch of them, and he had used them himself to basically protect his rights when he went out, you know, grocery shopping or whatever, and somebody wanted to get smart, talking about him not wearing a mask. So he's got this lanyard, and I just loved it. And, of course, I love Citizens for freespeech.org, but I thought we ought to have our own lanyard. So, I've designed, and I'm going to put in the order for, your ztitic.news medically exempt lanyard, and it's going to look like this. If you're just listening, head over to ztitic.news. You can check out the video component of this and see what I've got is the image I put together, which has the language on that will be on the lanyard, and it basically says, "Wearing a face covering poses a serious health risk to me," and adds that under the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, I'm not required to disclose any medical conditions to you. I'm exempt from any local or state regulation mandating face mask usage in public. So you can basically whip this out when you're at the grocery store. And like I said, if somebody wants to get smart, you know, you just put this 2 inches from their face and say, hey, keep your fucking social distance, you know? I'm hoping to, you know, use this as motivation to sort of build out a merchandise component of the website where you can support our efforts for free speech and, you know, protect yourself, you know, when you're out and about. You know, I was thinking about this, you know, the idea that wearing a face covering poses a serious health risk to me. And
of course,
you know,
it does.
The first thing that somebody's going to say is, well, what do you got, asthma? What's the health risk? And it's like, first of all, that's my business, okay? That's why it brings up HIPAA, because who are you? What are you, a clerk at Whole Foods?
You're not entitled to that information.
Yeah,
sorry.
Are you kidding me? Number two, you know, regardless of what risk it is, the only reason you're asking what underlying health condition I might have is so you can basically dismiss it, okay, as being, oh, that's not as important as protecting the greater public health. I can just hear that, you know, coming out of someone's mouth. So, you know, for me, it's enough to say, hey, wearing this is a symbol of my slavery and a showing of my compliance, and that's a greater health risk to me than this fucking virus. You know what I mean? And we're going to talk a lot about the mask today. So, how's that for an excuse? And, well, who's your doctor? You know what? I'm my own doctor. You know, I am ultimately responsible for myself. And I think that's kind of where we're at. Is people need to take ownership over themselves and assert themselves. So anyways, look out for that on the website. Hopefully, after they come in, you know, we'll build out that feature and you'll be able to somehow order, maybe even pay for it in your cryptocurrency of choice. We'll figure that out and, you know, make a special announcement and maybe even cut an advertisement or two.
Nice.
The other feature before we get into all of that sort of post-election apocalypse is Thesaurus Thursday.
Oh, yes.
And I believe you wanted to sort of cover Thesaurus Thursday today, and I think you want to talk about Masquerade.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if you have any specific sources you want me to bring up, but I've got the etymology online for mask.
Yes.
With a Q-U-E.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just listening, you know, you can follow along. Look up mask on etymology. And it says masquerade, masked ball, festive entertainment in which participants wear a disguising costume.
Mm. Yes. I mean, we're wearing masks. We discussed in a previous episode that the letter difference between mask and mark, like a mark of the beast, is only one. And that's between 18 and 19. The current one, mark, M-A-R-K, R is 18. S is 19, right? 18 divided by 3. Other letters, you get 6, so 6, 6, 6. We've also discussed corona as a six-letter word in alphabetically. If you add up all of the letters, you come to 66. C plus O plus R plus O plus N plus A. 66. So, essentially, masquerade is everything that's going on around us. It's basically an occult ritual designed to create a psychology of compliance within which there's really no limit to what can be imposed upon or lectured to whoever ends up wearing the mask. And ultimately, you know, we see poetic mentions of the mask. One that I think is particularly important is The Mask of the Red Death by Edgar Allan Poe. And it was first published, I think it was in 1842, and Prince Prospero... in his attempt to avoid like a dangerous plague known as the Red Death, he hid in his abbey, and along with all of these other wealthy nobles, they host this masquerade ball, and within the seven rooms of this large residence that he's in, and each decorated, you know, with a different color. And in the midst of all of the debauchery, there's a mysterious entity, a figure who is disguised as a Red Death victim. And he enters into this huge masquerade ball. And he makes his way all the way around the abbey. And Prospero ends up dying after this figure encounters him. And the costume, there's nothing inside it. So the guests, they also die as well. And so this, it's very gothic, you know, the fictional sort of symbology around it is very very potent, and I think that it has parallels today in terms of the psychology of the mask, that it's very much like ritualistic and fear-based, which creates a very kind of fragile psychology of mind. And
was interesting, yeah. You mentioned, and we've talked about it being one letter away from mark.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also talked about the scarlet letter as,
mm-hmm.
you know, that seems to be playing out in society again, this, you know, and, you know, look at the Star of David, for example, and other marks that have been given to, you know, the underclass, so call it. And, you know, number one, it is a mark of your compliance, but on the other token, it's a mark of your disobedience if you don't wear it. And it's interesting how people wear the mark, either way, the ones who decide to wear it, they know that they have basically complied and they've given up something, you know, that they didn't necessarily want to do. Otherwise, they would have already been doing it under their own volition. But now they have to do it. So to maintain that semblance of freedom, they customize their mark, and then, you know, different. There's a whole new industry now. This is RVs and custom masks and ventilators are like the only part of our GDP. You know what I mean? So, but it's only a semblance of freedom because right now they're saying a face covering's okay.
Right.
But, so, you know, it could be a bandana. It could be a star-studded mask that you got on Alibaba.com. You know, people are like, they're not asking questions about, well, how come you're not recommending one and forcing one? If it's about health, why aren't you forcing one that's actually medically efficacious? You're just allowing this. Oh, but they run with that as, well, I've got my freedom, you know, still to wear the kind of mask that I want. I have to wear a mask, but at least I get to wear the one that I want. Mm. And it reminds me of this definition, which is, you know, wearing a disguising costume. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are doing, is they're just wearing a costume, to, you know, show off, make a statement. Well, what is the statement? The statement is compliance. And, yeah.
Asphyxiation. You know, how dare you breathe, you pleb? I am a pleb. I acknowledge that. I wear the mask, and you know, that's just the way it is. And that's the psychology they want in mass everywhere, so that all kinds of other things can be slipped in through that same kind of docility that has been implemented. You know.
Well, this raises a good point. There was a one of our videos for tonight's show. If you're just listening, jump over to zetitic.news and check out the video component of this. I'm going to play a clip of Joe Biden talking about mass compliance, and he made a very interesting contradiction, if I can find it here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when it comes to just the sort of doublethink that goes into trying to justify all of the theoretical parameters around its use and all this, a lot of it is just based on kind of contradictory tautologies.
This took my breath away. I've got the clip now. Check this out.
Thank you, Mr. President-elect. You have been urging the American public to continue practicing social distancing and wearing a mask, but with cases skyrocketing across the country, do you think that more governors should be closing non-essential businesses and reinstating stay-at-home orders?
Look, it depends on the state. What I failed to mention earlier is the enormous respect I have for conservative Republican governors who stepped up and issued mandates for wearing masks in North Dakota. The idea, one of the leaders in this area has been the Republican governor in Ohio. In addition to the folks who've already been leading, like the governor of Michigan. I mean, you know, the idea that president's now existing, remaining advisor on COVID is saying that they should resist. What the hell's the matter with these guys? What is the matter with them? Resist. You know, every major individual of any consequence in the health field is saying we can save 100,000 lives just between now and January 21st by wearing these masks. It's going to take a while for the vaccine to be able to be available, distributed, and get to people. We're talking about 350 to 400,000 people dying? I mean, what are they doing? It's totally irresponsible. Irresponsible. And so I compliment the governors who stepped forward, who have been stepping forward, but also the Republican governors who stepped forward. I left out the governor of Utah, very conservative state, governor of North Dakota, and all the Democratic governors have been doing it all along. I mean, I just ask a rhetorical question. Do you guys understand this? Does anybody understand why a governor would turn this into a political statement? It's about patriotism.
How about that for a contradiction? He goes on and on about, do you understand why they would turn this into a political statement? It's about patriotism. Are you kidding me? That is a political statement that you just made.
Right.
Listen to that. Contradiction right there.
Does anybody understand why a governor would turn this into a political statement? It's about patriotism.
It's so in your face, the contradiction and the hypocrisy. And it's like, well, what do you expect it to do when you have politicians telling people what to do with their life? It's inherently going to be politicized.
Of course. Because what's the root of the word politic and politicize? It's polis, which is people. So politicization is unavoidable when you're talking about people. That's what people do. They
right.
politicize things.
Yeah, politics within your family.
Yeah. Because people want to be able to grok, you know, individual experiences and project them out to a collective. They want to mold the world within their own predispositions and the image of their own experience. And everyone's going to be doing that inevitably all the time. So
yeah. Well, listen, I was playing this clip, and I'm just going to have to fillet Alex Jones a little bit more. This is what we need to do. You know, this is what Alex is so good for. Is he putting it on?
He's definitely being theatrical.
Yeah, but it's hilarious. So yeah. if you're just a listener, you're in for a treat, because this is Alex Jones at an Austin Greenbelt. You know, basically busting up the COVIDiot harassers who've been instructed. Listen, I mean, he asked some good questions, like, who are you? Are you paid by the city? Are you volunteers? It just looks like that this is the thing, is it's made people into enforcers.
Right.
So they got the lifeguard out here, you know, making people have reservations to come to the park and wearing masks outdoors. Okay, so anyways, this is such a good clip.
A power grab.
Pass, I've been coming here since I was in high school and college, and now you guys use your COVID hoax to like set a checkpoint up so you can take over the parks and start charging. It's unconstitutional. This is not even a city ordinance. This is a illegal power grab of the people's Greenbelt, and it's time to free Austin. So are you guys volunteers for the city of Austin? Who are you, masked man?
I'm a lifeguard for Barton Springs.
You're a lifeguard for Barton Springs, now part of the criminal power grab. This is outrageous criminal activity. This is the seizure of the infrastructure of Austin. It is all color of law garbage. My wife came here this morning when you cult member Coops stood up here and you asked her, where's her reservation? Her reservation is that we live in a free country. We live in America. I call for everybody out there watching. The time for civil disobedience is here. I want this removed tonight.
What? Good.
Love it. I fucking love it. And I mean, I think Alex embodies what a lot of people are starting to feel inside of themselves.
Right.
You know, a lot of people aren't. They're just still, you know, head in the sand. They're afraid. But, you know, those of us who are with the eyes to see and the ears to hear, I mean, this is how I feel. I am getting angrier by the day.
I mean, and this kind of presentation is a good way to kind of rattle the cage a little bit. I mean, sometimes it takes a sort of, you know, bravura and bluster and to get into people's face and, you know, make a presentation out of it to an extent. And it takes a lot of energy, and it's not something that people, you know, want to prioritize. And I mean, I he's of course with the crew, and this is in a way a kind of display basis for the message he wants to get out there. But at the same time, it's kind of like, you can't really contest the charge that it's utterly unconstitutional color of law, basically coup-like decrees and conditions that are arbitrary and not based on anything intellectually, philosophically, scientifically efficacious. And, you know...
You have to start saying it.
Start saying something. To folks.
Well, because if we don't, this is what's going to happen. And this is another thing I found on InfoWars. So German doctor raided by armed police during live YouTube stream. Shocking footage out of Germany shows Dr. Andreas Nowak being raided by armed police in the middle of a YouTube stream for apparently violating coronavirus laws. Have you seen this?
Wow.
I just found this today, and it looks like it was published this morning. Okay, I don't know when the live stream happened, but they apparently passed some sort of infection laws in Germany, which sounds so ironic.
It's just more of that Masonic terminology, flatten the curve, social distancing, essential workers, you know.
Right.
You could add this one to the heap.
Speculation.
Infection laws. You know.
Speculation raged on Twitter as to the reason for the raid, with some suggesting Nowak had been active in treating injured protesters at anti-lockdown demonstrations. Others suggested the reason was that Nowak had welcomed too many people into his house, violating COVID-19 restrictions on gatherings. And this reminds me of a good meme that we had posted on ZTIDIC News Network Instagram. With Thanksgiving coming up next year, if you're just a listener, you got to see this meme or check us out at Instagram, ZTIDIC News Network. And it's just a picture of a police officer ramming in the door, and it says, "Police, we know you bought a turkey that serves 10 to 12. And that's where we're at. Yeah. That's really feeling like where we're at.
Oh my God.
Let's go back to the video, and you know, unless you know German, you're probably not going to understand the audio, but you will understand it when you hear the police busting down the door. So this guy's live streaming. I don't know what he's talking about, but he's clearly talking about politics. He's got a picture of Trump in the background, and he's supposedly a doctor, so I imagine he's also talking about COVID. Mm-hmm.
Es gibt keine Lebensvariante, die nicht existiert. Alles existiert parallel gleichzeitig. Jede Wirklichkeit.
He hears somebody at the door and he walks away for a minute.
Die Polizei ist gerade da. Die Polizei ist gerade da. Ja.
Yes?
Hör bitte auf. Ja, ich weiß nicht, was los ist.
I literally...
Wir haben vorhin über Angst gesprochen.
Moment, hier ist gerade die Polizei, bricht gerade die Tür auf.
You know, so Alex Jones yells at the COVIDiots who are, you know, useful idiots, which are leading to a police state. And he's crazy, but these police officers, they're just doing their job, you know.
Oh, man.
In Germany, no less. You know, I would think this would cause a visceral reaction to a lot of people in Germany who, you know, who remember how, you know, not that long ago what it was like to live in a police state.
Yeah, just 80 years ago.
But I couldn't help but think about our activities right now, you know?
Right.
We're not live streaming, so I guess that reduces the risk right now. But at some point we will be, and therefore making ourselves a target.
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's the thing, is you just have to have more and more people withdraw their consent as rapidly as they possibly can at this point, because, you know, they can't arrest us all, and if there's enough of a showing of the hand, and it becomes obvious that the witch wants to put us in the oven and cook us, well... maybe it's time that we shut the door on the witch.
Yeah.
And cook her.
Right.
It's getting to be that level and that point in the story.
I mean, it really, I almost wanted to start the episode saying this is an emergency broadcast, because it's feeling like that for everybody. You know, the heat is getting turned up. All this shit about what we can or shouldn't do for Thanksgiving. Ugh, and it's like...
disgusting.
I mean... I have family members who have canceled effectively Thanksgiving, and I was argued with, over the definition of Thanksgiving, i.e., you know, when you stay home with your very immediate family and have dinner on Thanksgiving Day, that's called not having Thanksgiving. You know what right. I'm saying? Thanksgiving right. is getting together with your extended family
right.
and having dinner. I'm right. not going to entertain some shit of redefining Thanksgiving this year, because it's, you know, so I made a joke about this family member canceling Thanksgiving, and I was corrected by, you know, the suggestion that, well, no, they're having Thanksgiving dinner with themselves. And I'm like, give me a break. That's not Thanksgiving. That is literally taking the orders and carrying them out.
Mm-hmm.
But by who? Tyrants. And, you know, I'm just getting increasingly less patient. Like,
right. Well, and it's the whole managerial paternalism that, you know, you can see all the way down when it comes to any kind of petty hierarchical authority structure. You're going to have these, you know, petty tyrants trying to control perceptions and, you know, manage everyone's behavior, and it's just so obvious at this point, like, the kind of, I don't know, archetypical, phenotypical nature we're in. I mean, it's a sort of dystopic Lovecraftian narrative to a great extent at this point. And, the idiocracy, arbitrary... projectionist totalitarian matrix is just, it's really rearing its face, and it's obvious. It's so obvious at this point to anyone who has eyes to see, ears to hear.
If you're listening, head over to ztitic.news and check out the video component. I've got another meme up, which is, the gremlins. And, you know, the gremlins at a certain point in the night, you know, at sunfall, they turn into the, you know, they were these cute little animals, and they turn into these demons. And it basically says COVID at 9:59 EST, COVID at 10:01 PM EST. I mean, obviously, it's, if you see the meme, you get it. This is the illogicality of all these orders, right? There are curfews now in many places because of COVID. Based on what science does a curfew slow the spread or transmission of disease? And that's like, it's getting to that level of illogicality and nonsense in it. I'm just surprised that, and I'm disappointed in the business community and people in general for kowtowing to such obviously hypocritical mandates.
It's very disconcerting, very alarming, and it really does kind of represent that bearish trend in human psychology towards the ground of feudalism, essentially, and that there is a kind of pattern of resistance that keeps people from breaking free of the obedience factor, you know. And especially when it's so in your face that it's based on completely arbitrary nonsense, there's still this ingrained kind of conditioned residue of the warped society that we live in that wants you to just capitulate, wants you to just comply. And then that's the role play that makes you a responsible citizen. And if everyone is kind of, thinking this way, and there's a kind of egregore, there's a kind of groupthink process that's happening, and that really is the virus at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you said that really before, is the virus. And I have repeated it many times since you said it to me, that the real enemy, the virus, the thing that we're actually at war is the mind control and the propaganda, because it creates a psychological ether resistance in progress in civilization. Like that's literally how insidious it is. All of the mainstream media networks. Oh, and I have an excellent clip on this note. And it was basically, I've seen compilations of this character before, but this one was just so spooky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the top-down media control.
I think I had
the scripting. It's reaching such a vertical integration and a consistency that should really raise alarm bells internally when you see this. That if you didn't think that it was programming before, watch this compilation and you will understand.
Oh yeah.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities, the El Paso, Las Cruces communities, Eastern Iowa communities,
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But
we are concerned about the
country.
Media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish
these
simply are true without checking facts first.
Unfortunately, some media platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control
the dangerous to our democracy.
This is extremely 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 dangerous to our democracy.
Man.
I mean, you want to talk about like arch Bernaysian, like black magic revelation of the method. This kind of echo chamber, mockingbird, top down, vertically integrated media messaging. Whoa, you want to talk about a threat to democracy? That's at the top of the list.
Absolutely. And amidst, so leading up to the election, right, the Hunter Biden laptop story broke and
buried.
Even leaked. Yeah. Okay. And then you see the technocracy show its hand before the election and say, this will not be promoted. This will not be published. And now, I mean, look at this compilation, you know, the, while they're censoring on the web, which used to be the sort of bastion of information, free information, no longer, that's no longer the case at the moment. They are scripting from the top down all of the news networks, not just the big ones, you know, the primetime hours at night. I'm talking about your local news too. That's why they're ABC affiliates or CBS affiliates or whatever, and they have that creepy Masonic symbol of the eye, you know, the all-seeing eye. But man, super, super spooky and concerning. You know, one of the things we talked about, and I alluded to the first episode of the year, was the surveillanceification and the drone apocalypse.
Yep.
And you know, this has had momentum for many years, totally unrelated to the COVID hoax, but now that COVID hoax is out there, it's like it is the next generation of panopticonic control and the next frontier for Internet of Thing technologies to conduct ever more surveillance in a consolidated way and in a law enforcement capacity too, because of social distancing requirements and contact tracing and all of these regulations that govern now human activity. And I meant to play this in our last episode, but I didn't bring it up, and I'll get back to what you're laughing at in no time.
Love that.
But, oh, man, I can't believe I lost it again. I've got this new drone, this Amazon drone that, here it is, you will have in your home.
Oh, yeah, these are fascinating.
And, of course, they present it as something that you would definitely want to protect yourself. But are you protecting yourself by allowing an autonomously controllable drone that can surveil in your house? Check it out. If you're just listening, head over to Zetidic.news. The company's new Always Home Cam is a camera attached to a tiny drone. The drone flies around your house and alerts you to intruders or emergencies. Amazon's Always Home Cam is just one of several new products that they're releasing, Internet of Things. And it's like, you know, we recently were at a bachelor party, right, and played that Mario Kart home circuit game where you drove around the house with an augmented reality camera, and they're scanning the environment to create contextual elements in the game. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's so many more bits of information that they would want to collect, you know, and I think that they are collecting. And you look at this Amazon drone, and they're already, you know, like with Pokemon Go, you know, making a 3D map of the physical world.
Right. It's that DARPA avatarization of all entities.
That's a perfect way to put it. Avatarization.
Yeah, it's the DARPA avatarization. So that they can run AI, they can run algorithms, and they can predict your behavior long in advance before you even know the circumstances into which you're going to be choosing your life's path.
I think it's
very alarming.
I think they're also propagating
Minority Report level stuff, for sure.
I think they're also propagating these sensors and cameras to literally create photographic mappings, three-dimensional mappings, so that they can create a virtual world based on the real world that you knew that you will be introduced to at some point with the headset, because you can't leave your house anymore. And that's the COVID future reality. That's what you'll be, you know, Ready Player One predicts. If you're lucky, you get to escape the shithole reality that you're actually living by entering into a you get to actually travel in this virtual world, for example. And with the specter of intra-city COVID checkpoints, it's not long before you won't be able to leave your house without, of course, having the vaccine.
Yeah, I mean that's the specter that is sort of haunting the future. That's that same, you know, long-term bearish proclivity that can sink human collectives and groups into a state of subservience under a parasitic, psychopathic cadre, a cabal that is polycentric in nature and does everything it can to occlude itself from view and use middlemen and all kinds of deflections and distractions away from what people really need to know about how things are run and
how
decisions are made on the big scale.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question about what you think the quotient, the let's call it the light quotient of the population is. In other words, as we awaken to this system, right? We're humanity. There is sort of a syndrome where, you know, that's what we're doing here at ZTEDx News, right? Is we're trying to wake people up and make them aware of some of this stuff so that they can think about, you know, their role in society, right? Mm-hmm. But I'll get your thoughts after this video I want to play. This also broke since we last had our episode, I think, on the 19th of October. And it was the World Economic Forum presents the Great Reset. And we talked about the Great Reset in a past episodes. It's not new news that they published and have discussed, you know, this purported reset. But they published this video, 8 predictions for the world in 2030 on November 14th. You know, subsequently, I think they even... This is not on the World Economic Forum YouTube channel. I think they actually deleted it off of their channel because it did, you know, like, I think they put this stuff out and normally nobody watches it because nobody has been paying attention.
Right.
But now it seems like getting back to the light quotient, you know, people are paying more attention and they didn't actually. This is more of like an insider thing. Like this advertisement is more like an insider thing. Like for the mid-level, like corporate heads and stuff, like, okay, this is what you need to sort of align your investments for, but it's not meant for the general population to like, try to react to. That's my opinion. I don't know what you think. 'Cause you've seen this, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's prediction. I mean, more like self-fulfilling prophecies we want to fulfill by 2030. I mean,
this is our agenda.
predictions.
These are our agenda. Who is the World Economic Forum again? Of the only the wealthiest people and heads of state in the world.
Right. I mean, the way that they present themselves is like, oh, they're just neutral prognosticators. We're just, you know, speculating as to what may or may not happen with future in the next 10 years. Here we are kibitzing on the world stage and, you know, who knows? Maybe it'll happen. 8 predictions. I mean, it's obvious that, this is a H.G. Wells style, like open conspiracy. Like they're just kind of telling you, they're just revealing, not even in a veiled way anymore, just, you know, what your future is going to look like, because we're not relinquishing us, the World Economic Forum. Yeah, we're not going to relinquish any power. In fact, our sway over so-called independent national governments is almost completely consolidated to this point. And here they are just kind of
admitting.
That's
why we have the arrogance to admit these things publicly.
And then, like, look at the image, of course. It's the whole, you know, fake cosmology matrix in your face, you know.
Oh, the curvizen. And the sun god in the vacuum. Yeah, we are the world. We tell you what to do.
I don't know if they narrate this one either. It says, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Whatever you want, you'll rent and it'll be delivered by drones. The U.S. won't be the world's leading superpower. Yay! A handful of countries will dominate. AKA, you won't die waiting for an organ donor. We won't transplant organs, we'll print new ones instead. Oh, that's promising. You'll eat much less meat. An occasional treat, not a staple, for the good of the environment and our health. A billion people will be displaced by climate change. We'll have to do a better job at welcoming and integrating refugees. Polluters will have to pay to emit carbon dioxide. And there will be a global price on carbon. This will help make fossil fuels history. Oh my God! And then you could be preparing to go to Mars and they put out the most ridiculous CGI image. Look, this is even... It has the aluminum foil on the exterior. Are you kidding me? Dude, that is a joke.
Oh.
Scientists will have worked out how to keep you healthy in space. The start of a journey to find alien life? Wait, I thought this was a prediction. What are you talking about? Western values will have been tested to the breaking point. What values are they talking about? Which ones do you think? You mean freedom?
You mean like the family?
Family, freedom.
Family, freedom.
Gun ownership.
Yeah, individual.
Right to defend yourself.
Dignity and sovereignty.
Freedom of speech.
Like
those are those
are Western values, right?
Are they? I'm asking. That's what people like when they think of America in repressive countries. Aren't those? I think those are the ones. Freedom of speech, opportunity.
Right to be responsible with lethal force. You know, I mean,
self-determination.
Exactly. So, yeah, those values will have been tested. So, in other words, we're testing them right now, buddy. This is not just going to be in 2030. They will have already been tested to the breaking point. And hopefully we will have actually broken everything having to associate with Western values.
Well, now we're seeing the merger. I know you're noticing this as well. You're noticing the merger of COVID, climate change.
Yes, and we predicted that early on.
Absolutely.
Early on, like in March, I think, when our episode, we're like, okay, yeah, they're just going to combine these two together along with the social justice, and, you know, it's just going to be a giant, you know, I think we used the word, like, cafeteria. You know, it's like a cafeteria identity. It's cafeteria ideology. Where, these are your selections. Here's your portion of climate change. Here's your portion of, you know, BLM. Here's your portion of...
Well, it just so happens all of the COVID restrictions are the ones that, were going to happen under the Paris Accords and the Green New Deal and climate change reform. That they were all going to result in massive industrial restrictions. New regulations, and you know, at the end of the day, it's actually you're not even going to have property. And they said it in their video, you won't own anything, you'll rent it, and you'll be happy about it.
Wow. I mean, can a drone deliver a residence to you? maybe you should just live in a tent city in the middle of a parking lot. And you'll just have drones delivered to your tent. Well, you'll be geolocated, and you know that'll be the new fad. Tiny homes are bad for the environment. We only need to live in tents.
Well, did you hear the Canadian Parliament? There was a discussion about the creation of essentially an analog to the FEMA camp, but for the purposes of detaining, you know, for quarantine, quote unquote, quarantine purposes. And they're building these things in every province in Canada. And they've also passed, you know, laws and so on that, you know, laws, quote unquote,
infection laws.
Yeah. To facilitate, you know, the detainment of people, which is already going on. I mean, oh, they say voluntary. We have a system of voluntary compliance.
Where we heard that before.
Right. The IRS.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I found an interesting merger of issues with this PSA with Lori Lightfoot, perhaps the weirdest looking mayor in America, at least. I mean, she looks like an alien.
Well, I've looked at some of these comments, and some people are like, man, she looks like straight-up death.
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, a lot of these public health bureaucrats are ironically not healthy-looking people.
Oh, no. And this is just the perfect example of the wedding between all the pseudoscience going on and the idiocracy pertaining to the public attitude towards science.
So
that they want everyone to have. Yeah.
Lori Lightfoot, Chicago mayor, she's paying herself with taxpayer money to make this stupid propaganda for COVID.
It's embarrassing.
It's really embarrassing, and it's a disgrace, and she should be arrested and obviously never hold, you know, public office again. But look at this lady. Okay. Not only was that completely unfunny, and it was just browbeating you. It does. It is. Science is back, baby. Science is back, baby. So to me, you know, it's like, you know, it's a false equivalency, or is it? You know, they started with one fictional thing, and that's the globe.
Right.
The spinning globe, which even the manufacturers of those globes tell you, it's just not representative of, this is not cartographically correct. It's not, you know, whatever, you know, phraseology, it's not representative of how the earth is. They say that, the globes. It's a fiction. Okay.
It's a projection.
It's a projection.
Purely abstract mathematical projection. It is not, it's not a placeholder for the actual features.
But those are in every public classroom in America.
Yeah.
And that's what they're, you know, brainwashing everybody, you know, to believe. But then she puts that next to, you know, you got to wash your hands and wear your mask.
Oh.
And it's like, oh, so, well, but if the first thing is a fiction, then the second thing must be a fiction.
Pretty much. And again, it's more just like, you know, revelation of the method. Like, they're just straight up showing you how they're trying to bamboozle you. And they just expect you to just be like, oh, nod your head and, oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Let's fight it together. Cool. Yeah. Well, I'm on the side of science as long as I can, you know, just be told what to do. Amazing.
Well, I also came across this video somebody shot. Clearly they were a passenger on Spirit Airlines, which I think is one of the cheapest airlines out there, and clearly this person was taking liberties with their job at a minimum, and hopefully got fired. I didn't follow up and see what happened to this individual.
Oh, right.
But
this is,
I think,
wow.
It's definitely a, should be a warning signal to those listening that regardless of what the law is, we are now in a state of not only, you know, police state activity, but, you know, turning your neighbor into law enforcement as well. And what the law is, again, doesn't matter so much as what they want to do.
Yeah.
And how they want to act and or oppress you. And this person clearly is on a power trip, being the a stewardess on one of the cheapest airlines in the country. Check this out.
Trusting that everybody can effectively take these preventative measures. Once the door is closed, if we have to ask you more than once to cover your nose, mouth, put your mask on, you're not going to be rude, you're not going to be nasty. We are going to simply take your seat number and your name, and when we get where we're going, you will either be arrested, fined, but you will also be placed on the no-fly list, meaning you will not be able to fly any airline for the rest of your life. So please, again, I'm saying this because there is usually always that one person, and I really don't want to have to do the extra paperwork and do more than I'm intended for my job. So if you do not agree or want to, you know, do what needs to be done, you are more than welcome to exit at this time. We have about 9 more minutes left, but I want to give everybody a fair opportunity that you know what is happening. Also, I'm not really sure what's going on with all these videos going viral of passengers attacking each other and or flight attendants. Let me remind you, we are government officials. This is government property. If you choose to act out of content or character on this aircraft, you'll be arrested and face 20 years imprisonment, and you also receive a $250,000 fine. If a weapon is used, you will face life in prison. So before anybody gets creative, want to feel froggy, want to be bad, want to be a superhero, let me let you know what's going on. With that being said, if you didn't like what I had to say, my name is Mario. That's with 2 R's. Don't forget to dot the I. I'm the lead flight attendant on today's flight, and I'm accompanied with a Fort Lauderdale and Dallas-based cabin crew who are here for your safety first and your comfort second. If there is anything that you need on your flight today to make it more enjoyable, please don't hesitate to let us know. Welcome aboard.
How about that for customer service? You think that person wants to maintain your safety on that flight? I mean, wow. Damn.
Wow. We are holding your breath hostage.
I hope that person got fired, because I know that was bullshit. Like, that's you're not a government official. This isn't government property.
It's not even a law that you're enforcing.
You aren't. You cannot say what people will be charged with before a crime even is committed.
Oh, let alone a non-crime in the first place. I mean, talk about neo-Stalinistic. I mean, that's just wow.
But that person's into it.
Right.
It's into wearing the mask.
Absolutely.
Into making you wear the mask. You got a problem. You want to get froggy. And, you know, you sent me this.
This is what I want to do every day.
And
every
it is
day.
Also what I want to do to clowns like this.
Absolutely.
Love this. Oh man, if you're just listening, you gotta check it out on ztiddick.news. We had a video component. He sent me this video. Clearly this is in some European country. I don't understand the language in the background, but this guy's got Joker face paint. He's in a corner store or something, grocery store. He's got a big cake in his hand, and there's a masker. Okay,
at the door,
he's
hey,
like,
"Where's your mask?
Where's your mask? And he is just
doing the Joker dance right up to him and pies him so hard in the face.
Yeah.
Oh.
Dude, that dude took way too long to react. He should have, you know, he should have, like, gotten out of the way. He just took that pie right in the face, which is brilliant.
Well, I mean, who's one of the biggest, you know, dweebs pushing the mask? It's Bill Gates. He got pied before
that's
too.
That's right.
So I think we need to bring back the pie.
Yeah, just keep one
just
around.
Keep
it next to your ZNN lanyard.
Exactly.
Oh man, that would be funny to put right next to it on the product page. Comes with a pie, so you can pie the next masker who wants to get smart or froggy. You know, while we're laughing, you also sent me, I don't know where you got this, but I reposted this on our Instagram, and it's somebody put some fake captions on a Mexican talk show host or whatever. I don't know what kind of show this is.
It's that dude with the crazy high-pitched delirious laugh.
And he's missing some teeth, so it just looks hilarious.
It just looks absolutely hilarious, and he is just so sincere and emphatic in his laughter. And it, basically what it, the captions go through the sort of gallows humor around the riots and the protests that were happening earlier this year, and the supposed rationale for why those took place.
Yeah, for viewers, you'll see it. For listeners, check us out on ztidic.news so you can see the captions. That's really where the joke's at. Otherwise, this is gonna you're going to hear a lot of laughter. That's so good. Man.
Brutal.
Man, that's really where we're at.
Brutal.
Oh, man, that was really good.
Ah. It's a really good summation, and it, again, it's that dark kind of gallows humor. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, what are you going to do? You can either, you know, curl up in the fetal position and, you know, ball the rest of your life, because, I mean, there's a certain amount of understandable things going on that would produce that kind of reaction. Or you can, you know, mock it and laugh at it and try to rise above it and see it for the ridiculum that it really is.
So, what do you think's going on with the election? Okay, so...
You mean the scripted reality TV show?
Well, our last episode was called Selection 2020, and... Man, we talked about the voting machines, and
right.
That's now national controversy, the subject of discussion, this whole Dominion voting system.
Right.
Where I learned this today, that our votes are tabulated in Venezuela and Germany through Smartmatic, a subsidiary of Dominion Systems. Mm. And... the CEO of Smartmatic's USA division is part of Joe Biden's transition team.
Oh, man.
Holy shit. And Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, man.
Whoopi Goldberg says...
if you are not sure that you're comfortable with Joe Biden, do what we did. Find things and then take it to the law. And if the law says it's something to look at, look at it, but from now on, suck it up.
So suck it up. If you don't like it, well, she said, who is we? Who is she talking about? We. What suck it up that we did? And I actually had a relative say to me for a meme I posted. It was the one, let me pull it up. For listeners, you got to check us out to see this meme. But it was, you know, liberal girl, archetypical liberal girl.
Oh,
2016,
yeah, good
Russia
one.
Interfered in the election. 2020, how dare you question the integrity of the election? And I had a relative basically say exactly what Whoopi Goldberg said.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with it. We won. And I'm like, first of all, who is we in that sentence? Who are you talking about? We won because I didn't even vote. And I've told this relative that before, that, but it just doesn't register in her head or something. But the point of this was the hypocrisy of the left, who spent the last 4 years, you know, waging spurious legal claims of election interference and, you know, foreign intervention on the part of Russia. They didn't suck it up. They complained for 4 years, if we're going to say we. And now Trump has, you know, and Trump, to his credit, he's been saying that the elections were rigged even before, but he won despite that for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And despite the rigging, and we talked about it before, you know, seems like he was installed by some powers that be, but there are competing factions of powers that be, right?
Sure. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, though, the election results, to a great extent, are kind of determined by an oligarchical derby market. I mean, let's just be honest. $1 billion in corporate lobbying money buys the same power in Congress as about 1 million votes. And how many hundreds of billions of dollars are floating around within the halls of Congress. I mean, more than there are people voting. So, I mean, that, it should just kind of answer that for people in the sense of, look, you know, it's this kind of a highest bidder contest to a great extent. And there's a lot of money behind this, you know, this Bolshevik virus putsch. And, you know, the Biden faction is they've got a lot of big pharma money. They're, you know, they're medical totalitarians, basically. So there's a huge international worldwide faction that really wants to implement that control grid as kind of the archetype of their agenda. And, you know, within the oligarchical matrix, there's certainly other factions that see that as a little bit too ambitious or a little bit, you know, poking the bear a little bit too much. And really, that's what this big conflagration that's been happening all year, including this election, is all about, is this big, you know, dice throwing contest that's happening right now amongst the huge power brokers. And, you know, they're all pointing and yelling at each other. But of course, they would all unite to defend the game that they're embarking upon, this kind of sick glass bead game that they've rolled out throughout the whole year. They would all unite to protect it. And we see that around the success and the pervasiveness of the whole Bolshevik virus, you know, display. It's kind of been outlined to a great extent why it's effective, why they want to keep milking it, who's obviously to benefit, who's going to need to be put under the thumb. I mean, yeah.
Did you happen to hear Sidney Powell, the Trump legal advisor, you know, disclosing in a press conference that the ties, the involvement of the vote tabulation with this Venezuelan company, you know, do you think that the Trump, like, I think it's the most important debate of in politics today is Trump legitimately resisting the global power structure as a nationalist? And is that, is our, you know, is our system for all of its warts actually being superseded by a global consortium of transnational companies? And is he legitimately resisting? Is he providing the illusion of resistance? You know, of course, some people don't even agree that that's happening, that this,
this is a totally organic, you know, act that, you know, no power could have ever predicted. And we're just fumbling in the dark, and we're trying to do the best we can through science.
They've already resigned. So, like, you know, how can I begin to deal with someone? Like, I have such an issue with the forced contract of government. The fact that they purport to be only limited to protecting my rights, but my only interactions with them abrogate my rights. You know, like, I have to, you know, give 30% at least of my effort to them in order for the privilege of paying for a driver's license, in order for the privilege of paying for a marriage license, and paying for a business license, and then paying taxes on everything that I earn, and then still also being subjugated to their rules and regulations. On top of all that, that for the privilege of that, you know, but they were only supposed to be limited to protect my rights. So how can I talk to somebody who would hear that as a foreign language, then discussing, you know, like, our checks and balances and, for all of its warts, you know, the judicial, the executive, and the legislative branches, and the process of the Electoral College, and the voting system, and, yeah, citizenship is voluntary. Y'all are all participating into it. You register to vote, and so you're agreeing to the contract of all that. But you know, that is being superseded by a transnational. I can't even. I already have problems with the force contract of the government that's here, but now it's like the, you know, that's a fight worth having, but now we have this much bigger problem of a world government who wants to inject me with a trackable microchip that's going to be essentially surveilled in a artificially created smart grid city. If not, I am essentially ousted into impoverishment. You know, it's just a hard conversation to have in contemporary society. You know, that's why the mask thing is so important to me and should be important to everybody. Is like,
it's a barometer.
It's now not, you really can't avoid the political discussion like you could before. It's like everybody having Thanksgiving next week. How could you not talk about COVID? And then it's like, oh, it's, I wish it wasn't politicized. Like Joe Biden, what the hell is wrong with these guys? The government, how can they?
They're not politicizing this the way I want them to.
Yeah, I mean, that's all he said. The way it needs to be politicized is it's patriotic. Just put on the moron muzzle.
But like, if you start to go into all the things that the mask symbolizes, you end up sounding like Alex Jones. You know, to the public, which is just like, oh my God, you're just crazy.
But well, I mean,
no, like it's out there for you to understand if you just look for the information.
Right. I mean, just look at the Sinclair broadcasting message. I mean, they're coming from a frame of reference of complete corporate paratry as the manufactured consensus that is branded and foisted onto them as the only acceptable opinion. And there can be a small, you know, myopic, controlled discussion and which patterns of dissent are, you know, permissible and which talking points, you know, can be seen as the controlled opposition. But anything that's dissident beyond that is like the new, you know, pariah. It's the new, you know, it's the new way of marginalizing people.
I had a conversation with my wife. Yeah, like to be a dissident now is to have dinner with your family. Are you kidding me?
Wow.
Like I have in the past, I have refused to give my driver's license at a unannounced checkpoint, police checkpoint. And that was unthinkable when I did it, you know, however many years ago, 6 years ago. To most people, they would just show it and comply with the officer. They wouldn't make some sort of, you know, they wouldn't be opposed to it. But now, like, it's a bit taboo. You know, I actually felt the taboo in a conversation I had. Somebody asked me what my Thanksgiving plans were. And I felt the taboo that has now been introduced by saying, well, I'm going to my brother-in-law's and his family's coming in and we're all going to be in the same house. And, you know, like that's like because of the government now, because the governors have said a bunch of shit about it. And it all varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
There's now a taboo about having dinner with your family on Thanksgiving.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you've seen all these, you know, hyper lefty screeds about, you know, well, if you're, you know, of European descent and you want to have a big family, well, you're perpetuating white supremacy. You know, it's that kind of stigmatization framework that they're applying to just celebrating anything.
Well,
with any kind of festivity, any kind of normal human pattern of congregation and celebration.
I'm sure you saw this, but they, in New Jersey, right, they said that you shouldn't sing or shout for over the holidays, you know, because you spread the COVID or whatever. But it's getting to the point, and you know, they always say, well, we're not going to enforce it. You know, we're just putting our guidance out there, you know, but they always eventually enforce it.
Look at the big tech stuff. You know, I mean, at first it was like, okay, you know, we do allow certain speech on here, but we really discourage it. And then all of a sudden it's just like straight up algorithmic banning.
Right.
You can't even say like a combination of like two words.
Yeah.
Like you will just absolutely
super aggressive.
It's super aggressive. So again, you give evil constructs an inch, they're going to take it a light year.
Oh,
not
yeah.
just a mile. Yeah. They're going to go as far as they can with yeah. it. Because it's they'll just use the same and also, you know, sophisticated and variated appeals to why you have to be submissive to it.
Right. Yeah, and I've got, for listeners, you got to check us out at ztitic.news. We've got a video component here. I've got an article, New Mayo Clinic Voice Tests Could Detect COVID. And we've talked about the surveillanceification of society, and this is just next level squared times a million. So you sound like you've got COVID. I can hear it in your voice print, but this also gets into AI and the surveillanceification, the digital identity. They do have voice print technology we talked about at the outset with Alex Jones because his voice print's been, I mean, it's easy to distinguish anyways, you know, so they use that. They built their technology off of that, but it can be tuned for anybody, right? And now, why would they voice test COVID if they weren't going to restrict your rights in some way based on your status, your COVID status, which is the new, you know, it's almost like the social credit score.
It absolutely
is. It's
it absolutely
social
is.
Credit score 1.0.
Right.
It's getting people used to that idea so that when other restrictions come along that, you know, are determined necessary by your overlords.
Uh-huh.
That the framework will already be there to do that.
That's a good point.
Yeah. But it also, you know, it's like people see this article and I don't know what they think, but they should obviously, you know, be alarmed at, how would they ever assay all that? That means they're collecting your voice data already.
Of course.
And to develop their technologies.
And again, it's like you give it an inch, it'll take it, you know, 1,000 miles. They could come up with any conceivable basis by which this, you know, boogie bug could be spread. And if you give them 1 inch and saying, oh, well, it can be left on surfaces for, you know, up to 5 weeks.
Right.
Or, you know, it'll aerosolize and linger in the air like a cloud of death. I mean, and then, it'll spread through your butthole. We need toilet sensors, you know, or it spreads through the food supply. We need to centralize all food and ration it out. You know, I mean, come on. Like, at what point is it just utter totalitarian bollocks?
At what point do you get a little bullhorn like Alex Jones and be like, this is outrageous criminal activity?
exactly.
But hey, speaking of the voice print and the algorithms and stuff, I heard a really incredible back and forth with Senator Chris Coons questioning Mark Zuckerberg and Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey about their surveillance and why it's not good enough and why it really should incorporate climate change. You know, again, we're seeing this merger of the two, Corona and Globetardia climate change ideology. So check this out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the last 4 years, we have seen some unprecedented attacks on our democratic institutions, our social norms, the ways in which we conduct ourselves as democracy, and many would say on truth itself. And in today's society, you can't talk about truth without also considering the impact of social media and social media platforms. So if I might, Mr. Zuckerberg and Mr. Dorsey, free expression and open debate are, of course, core values of our society. But whether you wished for it or not, the inescapable fact is your algorithms, your policies, and your business decisions shape what billions of people across the world and a working majority of people here in our nation understand to be true. That's the case for election integrity, for a potential COVID-19 vaccine, for climate change, for hateful and dangerous stereotypes, and many other critical issues. I also want to recognize that it, in no small part, was the hard work of many, led by your ingenuity and resolve, that built these impressive American companies and revolutionized the way the world communicates. We need that same resolve to reckon today with what must be done to win our society's battle for truth. Mr. Zuckerberg, as you know, yesterday I sent you, along with 14 of my colleagues, a total of 15 senators, we sent you a letter urging Facebook to do more to address hate speech and calls to violence on the platform. We focused particularly on anti-Muslim bias, on an issue that warrants specific attention given the tragic consequences of anti-Muslim hate speech in Myanmar and Sri Lanka and New Zealand and right here in the United States. And I appreciate that Facebook has taken actions in response to these issues, but this letter points out why we need better metrics and transparency to actually evaluate your actions. So my colleagues and I urge better enforcement, in particular, of your call to arms policy, which could have made a difference in a recent tragedy in Kenosha, Wisconsin. You and I spoke last week. I appreciated our conversation. Can I count on you to provide
really
specific and written responses to each of the questions in this letter, and then can we discuss them again?
Senator, yes, I read your letter, and I commit to getting back in detail with our team to address the important topics that you've raised. And one of your questions reporting in our quarterly transparency reports about the prevalence of hate speech that we find on our platforms. We will actually be adding that metric into our transparency reports this Thursday when we announce our latest round our latest transparency report.
Well, thank you, Mr. Zuckerberg. Let me just make sure I hear you right about prevalence, because that's one of my areas of concern, is the absence from the report of the prevalence of hate content. You mean you'll be reporting not just what percentage of hate speech on the platform you're identifying, catching, proactively removing, but the total volume?
Senator, that's my understanding, is the prevalence of that content is a percentage of content on the platform. And over time, our goal is going to be to get into more detail, which is the subject of some of the questions that you've asked here, as well as we've already committed to an independent audit of the community standards enforcement reports, so that way people can have full confidence in all of the numbers that we're putting out. We've been doing these reports for less than a few years now. And we'll continue to flesh them out and add more details, so that way people can apply the appropriate oversight and scrutiny to the work.
Thank you. I want to move on for a moment, if I could, about your call to arms policy. You said earlier today that Facebook made an operational mistake in not taking down an event page that called for people to bring weapons to a public park in Kenosha. As I think we all know, there was a tragic incident of vigilantism in Kenosha where a young man brought his AR-15 from Illinois to Kenosha and ended up with two protesters dead and one injured. You indicated this operational mistake was because Facebook had just adopted its militia policy a week earlier, and contractors without specialized training didn't pick up the violation. And I appreciate your frankness as to that in your answers to questions earlier today from Senator Durbin. But your response to Senator Durbin didn't mention that the event page also violated a separate call to arms policy in place for over a year that contractors aren't tasked to enforce. So I just have to ask as a follow-up, why didn't you before and also today reference the call to arms policy when reviewing what went wrong in Kenosha?
Senator, my understanding is that post did not necessarily violate that call to arms policy at the time. The call to arms policy does not prohibit anyone from saying, let's go get our guns and do something. For example, if people are organizing a hunting trip, that's obviously not going to be something that should be against the policies. But what we do on some of these policies, which I think I'm glad to get the opportunity to address this, is some of these are context specific and just require a higher level of context and expertise in the area to enforce. So we don't necessarily have all of the 35,000 reviewers assess every single one of these policies. So I can follow up in more detail if you would like on the call to arms policy and the nuance there specifically. But that's also a bit on how we operationalize these policies.
Thank you for that answer. I do want to follow up because just facially it seemed to me that this was a violation of your own call to arms policy. But I look forward to that conversation. Mr. Dorsey, if I might, at a House Energy Committee hearing, I think it was 2 years ago, you committed to something that I was just discussing with Mr. Zuckerberg, an independent civil rights audit, but in your case of Twitter. The audit released by Facebook in July has proven invaluable to bringing sunlight to some key areas in which Facebook does need to improve. Will you follow through in your commitment and commission to this independent audit of Twitter?
So we work with civil rights groups all over the country and around the world to get feedback. We're in constant conversation with them. And we do believe that being more transparent and making our transparency report a lot more robust, which today we still have some gaps, is important for any entity to audit independently of us. We believe that's important because an audit like that could take away from the work that we need to do. We'd rather provide the information in a raw format so that people can do that work.
If I heard you right, you aren't going to pursue an independent civil rights audit, but you are going to continue to release data and to consult with civil rights groups. I'd welcome a more thorough answer as to in which way having an independent outside audit would actually harm your transparency efforts.
I don't mean it would harm it. I mean that we want to provide enough information so that people can do this work independently of us on their own timelines. And that's where we need to make our transparency report more robust. And as I said, we have regular conversations with these groups and take feedback regularly.
You do, Mr. Dorsey, have policies against deep fakes or manipulated media, against COVID-19 misinformation, against things that violate civic integrity, but you don't have a standalone climate change misinformation policy. Why not?
Well, misleading information, as you are aware, is a large problem. It's hard to define it completely and cohesively. We wanted to scope our approach to start to focus on the highest severity of harm. We focused on three areas: manipulated media, which you mentioned, civic integrity around the election specifically, and public health specifically around COVID. We wanted to make sure that our resources that we have the greatest impact on where we believed the greatest severity of harm is going to be. Our policies are living documents. They will evolve. We will add to them. But we thought it important that we focus our energies and prioritize the work as much as we can.
Well, Mr. Dorsey, and I'll close with this.
Man, the casuistry and the evasive reasoning and the slithery kind of snaky characterology that these CEOs have embodied at this point. I mean, it's really something to behold. It's like they're these, slithery little worm tongue soothsayers at the top of the communication pyramid, or near the top at least. And they get to slither around, these softball, lefty BS questions as though real scrutiny and real investigation into these big tech personalities are underway, and here's a reality TV show of this
congressperson really grilling these guys from the left.
And it's like, yeah, right.
This guy's like, I understand you're censoring Hunter Biden's laptop, you know, bombshell. I understand that you're censoring all the truth on COVID, and I understand that you are censoring information about voter fraud and the state of the election. But why aren't you censoring more information about climate change and flat Earth? Well, right. We're working on that next. It's just that This was our initial effort, and we have to double down and go back to our drawing boards, and we're going to bring in more insights, and we've got our team, but we have limited resources. We have limited resources. I mean, we were only funded by, you know, the investment arm of the CIA, you know, with seed money and, you know, like in the case of Facebook, you know, are really a part of a DARPA project.
Right.
And look how weird this guy is.
I mean, for all I know, man, I mean, this guy's like a top of the line DARPA Andrew Borg. I mean, he just has the characteristics and mannerisms of a replicant or something. I mean, it's weird.
Yeah. Well, we joked a lot in the past about Hologram Joe. And, I was shocked. I swore he was just going to die or call in sick, you know, the debates. The fact that they actually occurred only underscores the possibility that he really is just a hologram. And then, like, post-election, it literally is a hologram to most people. You know, that he's broadcast into every home, and that's the difference. That's between, you know, having the mainstream media's sort of push and projection is extremely powerful in creating and dictating the psychological ether of the country, and in that sense, he really is. It is a hologram. You know, his election ascendancy is a hologram. But that's, the jury's out on that. Like, what's going to happen ultimately with that? You know, part of me thinks that. I mean, you can kind of already see they are fomenting. I think one justification for the sort of top-down depiction of Biden's win, as bold as it is to cause civil war. If Trump ultimately, like, clearly the Democrats knew what they were doing and didn't care whether they were caught or not. They're desperate. desperate in the sense that their crimes are already so well known and perceived by the public that is, they probably calculate it's only a matter of time. So, they just go for it. Then, because all the media whores are collaborating with them, they just go forward with this projection, the hologram of his ascendancy and candidacy, despite the constitutional process, which is again being superseded by, you see all these world leaders basically recognizing Biden as the president elect, even though none of the votes had been certified yet. And it's truly a election by media, you know, that's happening. And now that's part of the discussion. Like,
well, I mean, it's the fourth branch of the government to a great extent. And maybe one of the largest in terms of actual reach and influence, and that's, you know, the whole Arch-Bernaysian, you know, thanatoid, hyperbolic, pseudoscientific, totalitarian charlatanry paradigm that they've rolled out is, look, you know, we can just tell you who the president is. We hope let's have a co-presidency. How about we have a dual presidency where half the nation follows one president, the old president, and we have a other half of the nation that just follows this other president. And we just ripped apart the nation and, you know, balkanize it into zones. And, yeah, there goes the union.
But if they know that, they're, you know, ultimately the constitutional process will result in the exposure of their election fraud and Trump goes into office, but the goal is actually divide and conquer, destruction, consolidation of power and wealth, through depreciating the property value of everything, i.e. not just civil war, but shutdown as a means to bankrupt and, you know, cause liquidation to take place.
Right.
Then going forward with Biden's the president, deal with it. We're doing national lockdown, and then Trump winning through the constitutional electoral process as he did the first time. That will cause the match to be lit on all the gasoline that was poured by thrusting him into the presidency via the media. That's my take on it. I don't know if you see the same thing. Like,
well, I mean,
the fomenting of discord is kind of what I'm getting at with the bold Biden push is what I would summarize it.
Oh, yeah, this is a repeat pattern of the bought off corporate, you know, prostitute media is, you know, back in, you know, they called it for Dewey, and it ended up being Truman. They called it for Gore, but it ended up being Bush. I mean, you know, the media hasn't been able to just, like, declare who they want to be president, and then that president end up just being president before. And they're really trying to go broke this time around for it. Because if they can establish that as a precedence, then there is no constitutional republic. De facto. Right. It's just
gone. De facto,
yeah. De facto, it's gone. And that's been the overall, you know, trajectory, unfortunately. The overwhelming trend for the past 100 years has been to use the Constitution as toilet paper.
Yeah.
It hasn't meant anything to these tyrants for generations now. So this is them basically just taking the gloves off and being like, look, we proved it to you.
You're already bankrupt.
You're already bankrupt.
You were sold out
in
1913.
Right. Right.
You know?
Yeah, how dare you think that this archaic BS document that we've completely circumvented for the past 100 years has any merit now?
Right.
That's their whole coup. That's the whole Bolshevik.
That's kind of where the dream of Trump, I have a hard time with it. Right. You know, it was also the dream of Ron Paul, right? Like, that we're going to save the republic by electing a philosopher king, you know, through the vehicles which has been given to us. You know, a lot of Ron Paul people were like, you know, I don't like the Republican Party, but it's the only one that can win. And it's like, well, I get it. You know, and James Iredell in the last show, he said, you know, but by participating in that process, regardless, you know, you can't make a difference. And I don't deny that. Like, Ron Paul definitely made a difference by making his run. And I think that the difference to a large extent was exposing that, if you're a guy like Ron Paul and you have principles, you're not going to get there. Now, right. What is going on with Trump again, I think is the biggest debate, the most important debate in politics, because, you know, he has made some interesting moves. He's got a lot of really good rhetoric that that I personally like. You know, like he did, quote, pull us out of the Paris Accords immediately and deny the establishment of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But as you see, at least right now, at the point we're at in 2020, that didn't seem to matter because all of the economic restrictions of the Paris Accord just came as COVID stuff.
Sure.
You know, and
just in like a hyperdrive fashion.
Right. Yeah. And the G20, they're still meeting, the Global Economic Forum, the Club of Rome, the Bilderbergers, they're all still meeting. They all still have all the wealth, all the best property. They, you know, to a large extent, they have bought off all the judges and the politicians, just like George Carlin said. And I'm, you know, if the hope is that Trump is the savior and, you know, he's going to win. I'm not saying it's impossible.
I mean,
it is possible, but you also have to understand that if the courts are bought off,
right,
and he has a legitimate claim and they really don't want him there,
right,
then that's how that's probably going to go.
They will have already accounted for that contingency.
Yeah.
That's my kind of somewhat pessimistic kind of intuition is that if it really does come down to the courts and, you know, you and Joe is really just where all the barons are. Like, it's where the wager is, basically, where they want to take things. Then they will have already made sure that the votes, you know, cast legitimacy on that putsch.
What's interesting to me is if I think back to 2016, right, Hillary was all the media scripting and everything, the top-down stuff that we just went over,
mm-hmm.
it was just as true in 2016 as it is today. Mm-hmm. It's a little more in your face now with COVID, but it was all true in 2016, the scripting. And at that time, Hillary was the projected winner. She was going to take it. Newsweek already had the front page printed with
right.
Madam President and all of that, but it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, why was that? Because there was plenty of resistance to Hillary then, and if it was because of the amount of resistance,
at the end of the day, I think that you'd have to be sort of naive to think that there wasn't a collage of fraud that was happening in all these, you know, key counties, key districts. And it's true that typically the urbanite, cosmopolitan, sort of effete, liberal populations are vast and they're in cities, and the election boards over those, you know, areas can do all kinds of chicanery. I mean, if we are going to operate with the presumption that there's, you know, it's impossible for elected officials to have ill will, then what of all the little underlings that aren't elected that still can, you know, wreak havoc on the political system, like election board personnel? You know, at the end of the day, that could be one avenue. You could have all the voter, you know, the digital voting calamity. There's a collage of fraud that can, of course, happen.
I guess
the mail-in ballot.
I guess my question is, so many of they, you know, the power elite, they wanted, if you know, and all this remains to be seen because we're in a state of, like, purgatory with the election, and we don't really know who's going to actually be inaugurated, and there may
right.
be two inaugurations.
There could be two inaugurations.
You know, there could literally that could be happening.
I think that the dual presidency aspect is interesting because if you really think about it, the past 4 years, most liberals have had it in their mind that the media is their president. Because Donald Trump isn't their president.
Right.
So why can't the right do the same thing?
Oh,
if
my gosh,
if
yeah.
they just, you know.
Not my president.
Yeah, if they just enshrine
Biden. So when
Whoopi Biden,
Goldberg says, suck it up, well, what happened to not my president?
Right. What happened to not my president? Oh, no, it's our turn. Okay, now we can follow the actual former president who we have probably a good enough amount of evidence to suggest that there was a collage of fraud that was implemented against him.
Yeah.
And now he has his own media network. And now he has 70 plus million people,
that
if not more.
That could literally happen.
So I see it as the perfect Bernaysian, again, the continuation of the Bernaysian paradigm, which is you create the polarization by literally ideologically splitting up the allegiance within the nation. And at this point, the pumps are primed for it. Do I think that Trump is going to create like a TNN or, you know, some kind of, you know, two can play at that game kind of mass media effort to combat this UN coup, essentially? Because, I mean, let's face it, like, Harris administration, they're trying to turn America into, like, a vastly expanded version of South Africa. They're trying to implement ANC-style racial reconciliation reparations. They're trying to implement huge resource controls, you name it. Honestly, I don't see how people can't see it at this point. Now, is there a nefarious faction that has exerted a lot of funds towards Trump? I would say so. But it's not the UN.
Yeah, speaking of
excuse me.
The UN, which is one of many consortiums that just get together and plan our future, like the Global Economic Forum, who says they have 8 predictions, aka here's, you know, 8 agenda bullet points. Biden made a very interesting comment about a dark winter.
Oh yeah.
In one of the debates. Let's take a listen. Vice President Biden, your reaction.
10% of Americans say they would definitely agree to vaccine if it was approved by the government. What steps would you take in a vaccine if it were approved?
Make sure it's totally transparent. Scientists will see it, know it, look at it, go through all the processes. By the way, this fellow told you this is going to end by Easter. This is the same fellow who told you that, don't worry, we're going to end this by the summer. We're about to go into a dark winter. Dark winter. And he has no clear plan, and there's no prospect that there's going to be a vaccine available for the majority of the American people before the middle of next year.
President Trump, your reaction is that you have no plan.
I don't think we're going to have a dark winter at all. We're opening up our country. We've learned and studied and understand the disease, which we didn't at the beginning. When I closed...
The point there was he made this mention of dark winter, which was a 2001 simulation of essentially a bioterrorist attack.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think, you know, it's like he's just showing what a shill he is, you know, for the establishment, which clearly foisted this... plandemic upon us. I mean, he is such a blackmailed puppet. But also, as a human, I mean, you can see the dementia in his eyes, and he's struggling to, like, read the script as it has been given to him, and he's just a very pathetic, dying politician, you know, who is... Just try. Yeah, I cannot believe they put him into that position.
Absolutely.
You know, of all the great minds in the country, this is what the Democratic Party thinks is. He's Trump was right. He's a pathetic opponent. You know, but
which is why it's like, come on, he had like. Multiple, like large double-digit increases. I think so, like 16 or 17% higher vote count than Obama. And, like, you know, 13% higher than Clinton. Like, are we really to believe that this trajectory of personnel in the Democratic Party reflects some sort of increasing popularity? Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Clinton, Biden. I mean, at least Obama was had a little bit more youth and sort of charisma, right? You could give him points for that. But Clinton, like, oh, one of the most, like, corrupt fiends and, like, political witches you can possibly imagine. And then Biden is just this, like, husk, like, they'll just repeat whatever you tell them to say, essentially. And dark winter, I mean, talk about, like, Lovecraftian, like, foreboding.
Operation Dark Winter was the code name for a senior-level bioterrorist attack simulation conducted on June 22nd to 23rd, 2001. It was designed to carry out a mock version of a covert and widespread smallpox attack on the United States. And these sort of, like, planning events, that they're always under the guise of something that might happen. But it's really like the World Economic Forum's predictions. It's more like agenda points.
Exactly.
You know, this is resource planning for a future event, you know. Nothing is decided in the government until everything is decided.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they, it's just incredible.
Well, it's also like, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame, you know, shame on me. And how many times we've been fooled and we continue to, like, pretend like these political puppets are going to, like, present some grand, you know,
progressive alternative to the trend of austerity and immiseration that's essentially befallen supposedly the superpower of the world. I mean,
I would love to believe that Trump represents a white hat contingency that is nationalistic, you know, and taking a stand against global government.
Uh-huh.
It is interesting that John Brennan was freaking out about his firing of the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, who we had played a clip of one of our previous episode where he was talking about killer satellites from China and Russia, and that guy looked like an android, not a man of great intellect. But anyways, he was fired, and this other guy was hired who said we need to end all war. You know, so that is interesting, if not compelling, to the white hat, you know, argument. But one thing that leads me to dismiss that idea is, you know, Trump's involvement with the whole vaccination distribution, and it's like a foregone conclusion. I mean, even the markets, the stock markets, and most people I talk to in business are, everybody's just like waiting for this vaccine. That, you know, like, we've been conditioned, per Bill Gates's own words, things are not going to go back normal until we have the vaccine, even though we've never developed a vaccine for the coronavirus before. And, you know, what ostensible benefit it would even do depends on your belief system around how big of a problem it is to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so all this hype about, you know, $500 some million for Operation Warp Speed paid out, but it's not even, it's an inflated, I mean, have you noticed that, like, flu is down this year?
Oh, wow, magically, right? Yeah.
You know, the numbers are competing for each other as far as illnesses go. You know, anything that looks like COVID becomes COVID.
Exactly.
In the diagnoses. But also, Ron Paul wrote a really good article, and he mentioned that Google and Oracle will monitor Americans who get Warp Speed's COVID-19 vaccine for up to 2 years. So Google and Oracle are working together. How? I don't know, but through Operation Warp Speed and the Trump administration's public-private partnership, which we see a lot these days, especially in sustainable development. Sustainable development, public-private partnerships, or like toll roads, public-private partnerships, where, yeah, you're just a blood bag collateral who's going to be collected off of. But right. I wonder how this is going to work. They're going to monitor, let's see, last week a rare media interview given by the Trump administration's vaccine czar offered a brief glimpse into the inner workings of the extremely secretive Operation Warp Speed, the Trump administration's public-private partnership for developing a COVID-19 vaccine to 300 million Americans by next January. What was revealed should deeply unsettle all Americans. During an interview with the Wall Street Journal published last Friday, the captain of Operation Warp Speed, career big pharma executive Moncef Saloy, confirmed that the millions of Americans who are set to receive the project's COVID-19 vaccine will be monitored via incredibly precise tracking systems that will ensure that patients each get 2 doses of the same vaccine, and to monitor them for adverse health effects. So this is some sort of...
Jesus.
Isn't that implantable? That, I mean...
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be tied to a phone app. Mm-hmm. If you get it, you have to get a phone app. And, you know, if Trump is this great guy, I mean...
Right.
Would he be bragging about this development?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact, you know, that... Well, nobody will have to pay for the vaccine that you get. Well, it's like, fuck you for your service.
Exactly.
And if they're not planning for it to be mandatory, why do they need so many of them? So many goddamn many of them. It's not going to be some voluntary thing.
Well, and it's like if people can't see the conflict of interest writing on the wall everywhere, there's a certain kind of like Schopenhauer kind of realization that we kind of get what we deserve a little bit. I mean, if people aren't actively contesting it, then of course it's going to get mobilized on a mass scale.
Yeah, you get the government you allow or permit. And that's kind of where I'm at, you know. Governor, Mr. Mayor, you want to tell me what to do for Thanksgiving? Well, I didn't give you consent to govern me. You know, there is no contract. Can you show me where I agreed to the terms of our engagement? Who are you anyways? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I feel at this point. But sadly, people think that the government actually wants to help you and like take care of you and protect you and keep you safe. And it leads to very sad mental states of being of subservience and servitude. And this is, I fear, where we're headed in America is this kind of like, the hysteria, self-imposed hysteria, which is just causing, complete economic, I mean, if you can't hug your grandmother, and I'm about to play a clip, if you're just listening, check this out. This guy has developed a cuddle curtain so that he can hug grandma, at the same time be protected from COVID. So check this out.
Then he ain't gonna use them, but you've got to put your arms to the bottom one.
Ugh.
Yeah? Your arms are to the bottom one. Okay? My arms go through the top one. How amazing is this? I've only designed with you in mind. But I can give you a hug and I'm not touching you. Oh, but it feels like I am touching you. How amazing is it? And then you bring it back through. And then it's ready for the next person. It's kind of been on my mind for a while.
But you know, it seems like a joke, but it's not. It's actually, it's going on. It's widespread.
Like, it's like, oh, how innovative. How ingenious. Oh, man. Humans are so magical and creative.
Look, so magical. This is going on. Like, that was not a joke. The pandemic has for look at him spraying this sheet of plastic with chemicals and everybody's suiting up. This is ridiculous. Many are in nursing homes desperate for a chance to see their loved ones, so they wheel him up to this. Man, this is so sad.
It's Lovecraftian.
Now this hug allows them to cuddle with less fear of catching the coronavirus.
Or a Philip K. Dick.
See, this is the virus of the mind.
Right.
The
egregore, the group thing.
God.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's physically manifesting now.
But, you know, the enemy's not going to be invisible forever. They're not they're not going to keep it invisible. And this report about a new county-wide or a statewide county-by-county COVID alert system should really, in North Carolina, it should really alarm people. Check this out.
Oof.
Yellow, orange, and red each week to pinpoint the highest levels of viral spread in the state. Governor Cooper says the alert system includes additional recommendations on steps counties and businesses
should take. Our Capitol reporter, Michael Hyman, is live in Raleigh. Michael, the state reported a new high today in the number of people in the hospital due to COVID-19. Hospitals like Duke Raleigh say that overall their numbers when it comes to COVID-19 patients have been relatively stable recently. But statewide, there has been an increase, and they're concerned about what's going to happen after next week when people get together for Thanksgiving. Today, Governor Cooper unveiled this new county-by-county color-coded alert system that shows COVID-19 hotspots. The county's classified as red, orange, and yellow based on a combination of metrics that include the percent positive rate, case count, and to what extent hospitals are stressed. Counties deemed red or orange would stay that way for 4 weeks to try to improve their numbers. The color designation includes recommendations to people, businesses, and local governments on steps to take to slow the spread of the virus.
COVID-19 suspect.
Working remotely and even using fines or other penalties to enforce the existing statewide mandates. Some local government leaders have refused or been reluctant to do that.
Right now, these are strong recommendations. However, if our metrics keep moving in the wrong direction, the state could impose additional orders, either at the local or statewide level.
They do this all day, every day, in your face. They tell you, and I talked about it in the last episode with Halloween, we better not go outside. You know, and a lot of people would think I was just being dramatic, but... Now look at what they're doing with Thanksgiving.
Well, they're just borrowing this microcluster chartism from New York and Cuomo.
Right.
That's all this is. It's New York spreading their paranoid thanatoid hyperbole.
But it's
going
to get to
everywhere.
Zip code level. It's going to get to the gang leader on your street level.
Right. And
like the stewardess on that airplane, Spirit Airplane, Mario with two R's, don't forget to dot the I, motherfucker. Mm-hmm. You better wear your mask or you're going to get $250,000 fine. And, you know, you're going to be on the no-fly list. You're not going to, yeah. Man.
Wow. I mean, at this point, it's kind of like autarky is the only real solution to a great extent.
And autarky, for those who haven't used that word in a Scrabble game recently, what is autarky?
So it's the rule of the self, self-determination, setting up resilient communities of autonomous individuals, trying to do everything they can to create a sustainable sense of sovereignty. And, you know, not consent to all of the superimposed corporate, you know, legalese that seeks to entrap you into an illusory bondage system through fiat social contract.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you went there because this is everything. And it's been never more apparent than in this 2020 season of COVID. And that is the nature of citizenship, the nature of consent, the nature, you know, we talked about registration before and licensure. You need to just be reasonable and, you know, participate. If you want to have a business, if you want to drive a car, you know, you just got to, nobody likes to be at the DMV, but you got to go. You got to get your license. You got to get your business license. But what happens when they begin licensing procreation? What happens when they begin licensing where you can drive? You know, they're not going to go from point A to point B overnight, but they will go that far in a generation. I think they're going to try to do that in our lifetimes. And, you know, your point about the contract gets to the nature of citizenship and what is the social contract? Has anybody ever read it? What are the terms? Mm-hmm. That's what a contract, before you can even agree to a contract, you have to define the terms of the contract. You have to define the words so that you have a consensus between two parties. And what are the terms of our agreement with the government. They never define it. Ask a government employee to show you the terms of the agreement you have with them. Where are the rules? Exactly. Oh,
that's right. It's might is right.
Right. Might is right. So I highly recommend, if you're listening, check out this video component at ztitic.news on our website or YouTube channels. or check out Sovereignty Education and Defense Ministry, sedim.org. They have a really great series of documents about citizenship, nationality, and tax status. And they really break it down very clearly where you are in relation to the onion of bureaucracy known as government. And what is citizenship? How is it defined in the code as well as in reality? And where do you stand in relation to that? You know, most people don't understand that there are many different types of United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is an all capital United States of America corporation. There is the geographic area, which is colloquially known as the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say, you know, you're a U.S. citizen, it's really important what that really means. You know,
right.
do you mean that you were just born in the area colloquially known as the United States of America, or does that mean you have become through either naturalization or the process of becoming a citizen, a U.S. citizen of the corporation? You know, and this gets even more muddy when you talk about federal versus state jurisdiction, and also Washington, D.C., and that whole subject of law and the code. But the point here being is most people just like merge their own essence, their own sovereignty with whatever the government says. You
are
obligated to
them,
be
right.
As a U.S. citizen.
Right.
They define the terms of citizenship. You are the one who voluntarily comply with that and give your consent, and then therefore you have to be their subject.
Essentially, I mean,
right?
It goes back to the old Roman guild system. You know, there's like an inner temple, outer temple, you know, gatekeepers. The university system is run like this. Many corporations are run like this. The government, to a great extent, is run like this. And, you know, you play by the rules of the consensus of the cadre, and, you know, you get the nice contracts and the awesome checks and opportunities and everything. I mean, I remember we talked to John about this, and it was an echo episode. We had some audio issues, but we got on this topic of, you know, what you think is a legitimate government is really just pecking orders based on kind of a loose guild system structure that is really all about in-group, out-group dynamics. And if you break it all the way down, states, nations, governments, corporations, it's kind of a big revolving door. They go in and out. There's conflict of interest is, you know, rampant, and it's essentially pay to play, and it's a giant glass bead game over, you know, billions of people. And because people don't understand the brazenness of the parasitism in these power structures, they lend legitimacy to them, thinking that they're natural and that they ought to have developed this way and that people ought to obey and they ought to comply because that's what a responsible person does. But it's like, wait a second, if you really do understand the structure of how these governments got to be the way they are,
And you're not part of the club that it has the biggest benefit and the biggest stake to be gained in the application of force, then what are you even consenting to? Who is giving you the opportunity to understand the terms? Or are you just a pleb? Are you just a peon that is essentially a human resource for them to track and trace and control and, you know, treat as, you know, cattle, essentially?
I suggest everybody look up the definition of a license. Official or legal permission to engage in a regulated activity. Okay, what do you need a license for? A better, an easier question would be, what don't you need a license for? You need a license for everything that matters. Driving a car, getting on an airplane, flying a helicopter, having a business, operating, getting married. You don't need a license. You need a license, in a sense, from the other person to have sex and procreate, but pretty soon it's going to be on the level of a driver's license for that.
Dude, I mean, they already kind of did that with, like, the eugenics boards and stuff back in the day. I mean, I could totally see something like that coming back where procreation is completely upheld on a genetic AI algorithm-driven basis. And that's the level of control. That's the level of Huxleyan intrusion that they want to create. As a normalcy construct, as something that people think is cool and sexy and savvy. And that anyone who contests along the way, even though they've had to, you know, just to survive, they've had to get the updates and the chips and any number of pokes and prods, and they're still contesting, but hey, just get along with the program, man. And that's the whole, you know, transhumanist momentum is you don't really want to live as a human anymore. You want these updates. You want these next level transcendental technological interfaces that will allow you a new future and a new identity and a new possibility. And in the meantime, you know, you're in this meat sack and you need a license to drive, and, you know, yeah, the world's just crappy. Why not just completely give in to a technocratic authority that will allow you to transcend your biology? And, you know, these kind of ideas have been dovetailed in with the sort of communistic, fascistic, totalitarian frameworks over time. And to a great extent, the medical aspect of it has really pushed that element into the, you know, marketplace of ideas. Like, oh, you know, the human body is so sickly and needs to constantly be managed. And, you know, the immune system is cool and everything, but without our expertise, guidance, and assistance, well, you know, you're just a hairless ape, you know. It's that kind of deep misanthropy that is the proof in the pudding, so to speak, as to what's really at the heart of all of these developments.
I'm no defender of the public education system, but I was speaking to someone recently, and they expressed concern about, you know, they wanted their kid in the public school system, which I respect their choice to want that. But at the same time, they were very concerned with risking their child's life by sending them there, despite all the draconian restrictions and the fact that school isn't going to be school anymore. It's going to be more like a re-education camp on how to comply mm-hmm. with the latest COVID propaganda of the UN and of course, all the racial equality, diversity, bullshit, social engineering. But the point was, she was like, I don't want to risk her life, you know, maybe get COVID in the school, even though she's going to wear a mask, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, then why do you ever put her in a car anywhere to go anywhere? Oh, That's right. You're not allowed to have risk anymore. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to take a risk. You cannot enter at your own risk. And that's if I owned a business, public-facing, storefront or something like that, I think this would be my hill to die on. I'm not going to adopt your social distancing, your capacity. I already disagreed with the fire marshal requirement
exactly.
for a certain number of people because, it's just imposition. It's like the civil rights movement resulted in the government intrusion in the business place to begin with, which gave them the, quote, jurisdiction, I put that in quotes, mm-hmm. to even impose a COVID restriction or, mm-hmm. or a capacity requirement. So it's just the great irony of all times that mm-hmm. the thing that is lauded to be the thing that set the slaves free mm-hmm. is actually the thing that put the slaves in chains
right.
in modern times, however many years, 50 years later.
Right. It expanded the definition of what the plantation actually was.
If I was a business owner and I had, the public health board, who's a bunch of numbskulls who think we should fluoridate the water supply in the first place, telling me that I can't, have my business here unless I put some stickers on the floor telling people how far apart they can stand and I have to wear a mask and I have to test my employees and all this bullshit. I would be like, that would be my hill to die on. Now, of course, easy for me to say. I don't have employees and things, trying to survive. But I'm just so disappointed in how easy it was for them to come in and convince everybody to just slit their own wrist.
Well, I mean, we've seen all of the thanatoid hyperbole in the media. I mean, how many blockbuster, hundreds of millions of dollars in profit virus pandemic movies have there been?
A zillion of them.
A zillion of them.
As many as there have been a zombie apocalypse. And now we've got both because people are zombies.
Right.
All COVID, hysterically, neurotically afraid to get close to anybody. They've been in isolation. They're, probably malnourished in some instances.
Just increased indelibility. I mean, it's really torture at the end of the day. It's incremental, long term, slow boil torture. It's like Chinese water torture, just a drip at a time,
Now, these are strong recommendations now. I hope I don't have to enforce them, but I'm gonna.
Right.
I'm just getting you ready for it.
Well, I mean, what happens if they come out and say, actually, COVID's an alien. It's an alien virus. We don't know where it's coming from. It's just mutating in a way that we can't control.
Even our vaccines aren't going to work, can't go anywhere.
Even our vaccines
I've seen
work.
A lot of people say, even after the vaccine, we're still going to have to wear masks.
Right.
Because the vaccine is not
100%
effective. And it's just like...
Unbelievable.
Shut the fuck up.
Right.
Y'all motherfuckers need to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, if people can be conditioned to just, roll over and believe whatever contradictory, post of inchoate guidance or... musings as to how people need to sequester themselves, then they'll buy anything. It's like, where is the real boundary? Where is the pattern recognition?
Right.
Is there any pattern recognition?
Well, speaking to the meme I have up here. If you're listening,
absolutely.
You got to check us out on Instagram at ZTidic News Network. But we reposted Ebony Pill 94. Love their channel. They lied about thalidomide. They lied about tobacco. They lied about asbestos. They lied about mercury. They lied about opioids. They're lying about vaccines. They lied about aluminum and deodorants. They lied about talc, hygiene products. They lied about hormone replacement therapy. They lied about fluoride in the water and antibiotics. They lied about all this stuff. And yet, now we're supposed to believe that the FDA is going to warp speed a vaccine. You got to take that to be normal, but normal also includes wearing a mask for forever. And, you know, they didn't, they lied about all that stuff, but they're not lying about this, and it's going to help you. It's so absurd.
It's so absurd. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, what if they're really doing this contact tracing stuff to just sort of observe a silent weapon system getting turned on and how effective it is incrementally, and that the vaccines are just part of the weapon system, essentially?
Yeah, the targeting system.
Right.
Right? Because, yeah, where to direct their, you know, electromagnetic and ultrasonic, and, you know, who knows with the 24/7 drone surveillance and or blimp platforms with lasers and other magnetic weaponry that Mark Esper, the former Secretary of Defense, is talking about Russia and China having that can not only superheat the atmosphere, but literally just like melt your house and probably, you know, it can be tuned, I'm sure, to just give you a heart attack. It is truly like a, like a, like there's a, yeah, like in the Matrix, like the
Sentinels.
The Sentinels, yeah. Right. Like there's a God, you know, like a God, you know, false God with this technocratic control who just, yeah, I used to joke about former mayor of Durham, Bill Bell, having an office at the top of University Tower, which is a very pronounced, well-known glass tower in the RDU area. And that's where he controlled all the stoplights. And there was this stoplight that I would always hit coming up 15501. And it was right by University Tower. And there's that blinking red light that just looks devilish, and I just imagine, you know, like the Eye of Sauron, he's sitting up there controlling all the stoplights, because, you know, the government does control all the stoplights anyways, but
I'm
just like, he's stopping me in my traffic, you know, like, fuck that guy. Obviously, that's my own,
transportation is a classic example of how they've quarantined us already for so, you know.
Yeah, if you look at the road network that, you know, they limit our exploration capabilities.
Immensely.
And I had a conversation recently with a friend about Antarctica. You know, that's another trending subject of investigation and discourse. You know, and as people question the authorities, you know, and they follow the money up to the United Nations and stuff, they're going to start wondering, you know, what really is going on. You know, like if the royal family's all involved with that, with Epstein and so on, and they're funding all this genetic seed banking and stuff in Antarctica, you know, like what's going on there?
And the Federal Reserve reports back to the Vatican Bank, and, you know, it's all just one giant interconnected panoply. And, again, it's the whole glass bead game. Check that out by Hermann Hesse. Fascinating.
Is that a book? Or?
Yes. It's, okay. It's his last book.
Called The Glass Bead Game?
The Glass Bead Game. Fascinating portrait of worldwide political power in the form of sort of an occult game theory.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think there's something to that. I think that to a great extent, the real powers are more or less unseen.
Oh, totally.
They're of a kind of Lokean, mystical, egregoric kind of nature, and they speak chaos kind of into human consciousness, and it's, you know, liminally willed and subliminally, you know, internalized, and it's a pretty fascinating concept to, you know, have it as a lens to view worldly phenomena. Cause I mean, I think that the extent to which groupthink dynamics have become fine tuned
to such a predictive extent is, it really speaks volumes about their classification of humanity as a resource, ultimately. And it goes back to the, really beyond the master-slave dialectic and the Hegelian dialectic, it's really the host-parasite-symbiote discussion. It has to be more of like an ecological portrait of, like, you know, programs are rolled out throughout the world and economies are created and maintained in a certain way for very specific equilibrated purposes, much like an ecosystem. So I think that the economy and ecology have this very intimate relationship philosophically. But ultimately, both are hijacked and counterfeit versions of them are presented to the public as the only acceptable ways of considering them and their relationship within, you know, the context of one another. And that's why you have these scientific authorities, you know, constantly trying to get a carbon tax pushed, you know, because that's them wanting economic predominance as dictators over the market, essentially. So it's all about these factions trying to vie for more and more coalition-based leverage over more and more people and more resources. And this is clearly a parasitic dynamic. These people aren't necessarily producing anything except suggestions for how best to make sure people fall in line to their whims and their pre-existing desires.
Yeah.
So in that sense, you know, a culture of sort of symbiotic courage, right? I mean, this is where the autarky discussion really leads, is creating your own markets, you know, having a sort of pro-agorist orientation to relationships, to travel, to resource sharing, I think is definitely crucial going forward, because the state's not they see you as a host of digits and numbers, and again this DARPA avatar that they seek to track and trace and ultimately guide the destiny thereof. And the more virtualization of reality there is, the more likely people will just kind of capitulate to that paradigm, because they don't see any other alternative, because they've been conditioned to accept no other alternatives as possible. So that's the sort of situation we're in, is the pseudoscience has to basically be blown up. I mean, that's really, I think, their fundamental ideological linchpin, is pseudoscientific appeals to power and authority.
Like Lori Lightfoot's comparison of the globe
is the real science.
Yeah, science is back.
Right.
And
baby,
the earth is not flat, baby. And wear your mask. Look how cool I am. Like, who in the hell thinks you're cool?
No. Yeah.
And her public health director or whatever, wash your hands. It does prevent.
Ah. I mean, and then you look at the future person who's may in fact be vice president. I mean, it's really just a Harris administration anyway, but she is kind of scary, because last I checked, she never prosecuted any priests in her entire time as California, even though there are multiple instances in which she could have, because there was a large preponderance of evidence to suggest that widespread sex abuse was indeed happening. Oh, now maybe we see which faction is also tied to the UN. Maybe the Vatican? Maybe the Holy See? Oh, giving payback to people who have expressed allegiance and given them favors and have run cover for them.
I think there's something to that. Because, I mean, here's a classic example. She's not qualified to do anything except sit in a jail cell. She's
horrible,
horrible tyrant. And look at who she runs cover for.
Did you see Laura Loomer expose her body double?
Ooh. Oh, that's... Yeah, she's interesting.
So, again, we joke about Hologram Joe.
Uh-huh.
It's not above these people to use body doubles.
Of course not.
So whether you believe in clones or not is one thing. Hologram's right. Another. But they... Right. Look. Sorry for that audio.
Oh my God, it's not her. Jesuit theater in your face, man.
Do you talk about the occult?
The occult thespian industry. Yeah, this is huge.
Yeah. So
this is huge.
You know, what kind of, obviously, you know, what kind of person has to run a campaign and be running for president and authorize this kind of activity? Yeah. But then what kind of person actually dresses up like her and goes out like that and pretends to be her?
Sure.
And of course, with the COVID ridiculousness, it's easier than ever
to do that. Yep.
With the mask acceptance, mm-hmm, as being, you know, the normalization. So
definitely
we're just in such
kabuki theater,
such dystopic and kabuki theater is a great way to put it as well. All the cloak and dagger Decepticon sort of approaches. And with augmented reality and the virtualization of everything, it's getting the lines are getting very, very blurry between what is real and what is not. And that's why, again, autarky, what can you control? You know, as far as solutions, like what can you control? How can you make your environment better? I saw a meme that I loved and it was like, well, how come the Amish aren't struggling with coronavirus? And it's because they don't watch TV.
Right.
You know? And exactly. So, you know, you can, it's sad to be able to finish people's sentences because you already know the programming that is being digested from, you know, your garden variety of mainstream media networks, your three letter agencies, in other words, Fox, CNN, NBC, CBS, they're three-letter agencies, just like the CIA, because the CIA Mockingbird, you know, program controls them to a majority extent,
absolutely,
in the information they come out. So,
Lord and Savior Fauci, you know, people just parroting his, it's unreal. Is it? I mean, they always go after Trump, of course, for the cult of personality thing. And there is, you know, something to that. He is kind of a little bit of a cult of personality. But look at how they're trying to elevate someone like Fauci. This guy, it continues to rear his decrepit face and smirk and snarl and snort and chortle at people. He is now a celebrity, and all he's ever done his whole life is look out for Big Pharma special interests.
And look, he recently said, you know, I've got an independent spirit, but now is the time to do what you're told. Okay, he says, I was talking with my UK colleagues who were saying the UK is similar to where we are now because each of our countries have that independent spirit, except we don't. We broke off from y'all. But he says, I can understand that, but now is the time to do what you're told. Fauci noted that scientists have been perceived throughout this pandemic as, quote, authoritarian by members of the public because of the steps taken to combat the virus. He noted that it's unfortunate that science has been lumped into politics. It's like, dude, you're fucking responsible for that.
It's just, he's it's a mockery of people's intelligence. He can just, you know, sit up there and talk doublespeak all day and expect that people think that he's some, you know,
I'm with the science.
Medical prophet. It's the guy. The
he's such a clown.
Total sham job.
He's such a clown.
Such a clown. And he's a fraud. He's a total fraud. He's pushed all kinds of toxic treatments onto people in throughout his career. And, you know, there's never been any reprisals. He's never been held accountable for any of it. And you don't see that kind of investigation into his background. He's just this true medical leader that's just jumped onto the scene, and thank goodness for everything he's doing for us in the United States. Oh, he's so hot right now. You know, like that's the cult of personality around him. It's crazy.
And he gets to go throw a pitch out at some baseball game.
Yeah, missed by a mile. This is embarrassing. The dude probably couldn't even curl 20 pounds.
His arm probably hurt from the vaccine he got that day. You know, it's going to hurt a little bit, but it's for the better.
Oh, my God. Classic.
Well, hey, let's wrap up the episode. It's been good. Yeah. Look out for the lanyard I mentioned.
Yes.
I'm going to try to get the merch store going with the initial product offering. Also, you know, you can subscribe to our audio feed on all the major platforms. As you can see at the top bar, we're also going to try to spread our content on DLive. We have our YouTube channel for now, although, you know, you probably have to manually go to it. You're not going to find it in the search engine.
No way.
Instagram. We also are active on Twitter. And everything gets mirrored. Everything that goes on YouTube does get mirrored on BitTube.
Nice.
And eventually we will probably start building out content on Gab. And I'm also looking into Parler.
Parler.
I'm looking into
well.
Parler. Yeah. So thank you, Xavier, for
Absolutely.
Coming out. Hey, I'm going to send you another
Always pleasure.
1,000 T-Fuel. Theta and T-Fuel have been kind of quiet over the last...
Just a really nice turning resistance into support consolidation.
But Bitcoin has been on a crazy tear.
Yeah, sure.
It's almost 18,000, so
yeah.
I don't know what Peter Schiff is thinking now. you know, because this bubble was supposed to have popped, you know, many times already.
To go back down to $1,000, old Pete. Yeah, uh-huh. See, that's the thing is, you know, decentralized finance is here to stay.
Yeah.
People don't like banks, okay? People want to be their own bank. And there's so many ways you can be your own bank these days and not go through all these, you know, corporate middlemen. And hopefully, you know, once Theta really starts kicking and it becomes, you know, the hot new place to, you know, finance a media operation that's not under the thumb of, you know, Zuck and Jack Ben Al Dorsey.
Yeah.
We're going to have a lot more syndication, a lot more community building online. And I think that's, you know, for better or worse, a good frontier to explore at this juncture. And always a pleasure.